So hello and welcome to this podcast from Red Vesper, a business analysis consultancy in New Zealand. We're fortunate enough today to be talking to Alan Godestina and Mary Gorman from EBG Consulting in the US. I'm going to be talking to them today about the book they published late last year, Discover to Deliver, and the direction they're taking with from that going forwards. So good morning from New Zealand, Alan. How are you?
Great. Good morning, New Zealand. Good afternoon, New England.
And Mary, hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm actually down in Florida this week. It's beautiful here. We're moving into summer as you guys are moving into winter.
Yes, we've just started, autumn started with a vengeance now. So the mornings are getting chiller, chillier, but it's still beautifully sunny here in Auckland.
Good.
So it's been my pleasure to have known both of you for some time. We worked briefly together on the Agile extension to the BA body of knowledge, and Mary, with Red Vesper, we were lucky enough to sponsor you to come over to New Zealand and talk at the BA Development Day. So it's been great having that connection with you guys over that time. And it's been a real pleasure to read your Discover to Deliver book when I got that last year. So I wanted to kick things off really and set the scene about the book. The book's called Discover to Deliver. Who did you have in mind when you were writing the book? Who is it aimed at?
Mary, you want to start off?
Sure. We really were focused originally on a number of personas. And we realized that it would be helpful for us to take a closer look at these. And we did quite a bit of analysis, as good analysts would, to try to think about our potential audience. So we created, as I said, a number of personas. One was Barry the BA. And we actually thought about what his needs were, what his goals were. And then we also had one around the PM. Alan, would you like to speak to that?
We had a product manager, Polly, the product manager, right?
Yes.
And project manager. So I think those were initially our three initial personas that we had. But as we were working more and more with agile teams, you know, really doing the real work, we saw that this is really about the whole project community that is focused on, you know, delivering a high value product. It's not necessarily focused. These practices are not necessarily focused on one single discipline because it's really the shared understanding of product needs everybody has to have.
We've actually gotten some really powerful feedback from developers, from testers, and how they found the concepts to be helpful also.
Right. So, I mean, we really are crossing disciplines, not just business analysis, but product and project management, architects, developers, testing QA people, of course, agile coaches, user experience folks. What we did, you know, in building the book, we had three major releases, but we put together reviewer panels that crossed all of those disciplines. So we made sure at each delivery cycle, each release, we had reviewers that were in those disciplines so that we could make sure to get holistic feedback on the book itself, the contents of the book.
That's great. Thank you. I think that one of the strengths of Agile practices is its bringing together of the cross-functional teams and starting with all of those practices, all of those disciplines right from the outset. So it's fantastic to know that you had that in your minds when you were actually planning what you were doing with the book as well. Putting it into the whole thing into practice, as it were. The title, Discover to Deliver. What was it you had in mind when you were thinking about discovery in that sense?
Mary, talk about that muscle.
Well, this idea that a lot of teams we work with are really, really good at delivering. And they're like finely tuned machines, the really successful Agile teams we work with. And what we've found is that whether it's Agile or not, many times we're not as adept, we're not as practiced at discovering what the product needs are. And we wanted to be able to ensure that we had a set of practices, vocabulary, concepts that would work for the entire community, from the first idea of having a vision for a product to actually delivering it. So we really wanted to have this seamless way of sharing these concepts.
You know, a lot of people are good. So it's like focusing on another way to put this is you have the delivery is the downstream work, the engineering work, and the discovery is the upstream work. Or another way to think of it is validation and verification, where, you know, delivery, you're very focused on verifying that you built the high quality product. And in discovery, you're making sure that you're validating that you're building you're going to build the right product in the first place. So in the image you have of the book, we have that infinity symbol with discovery on the left and delivery on the right, and they interleave with each other. So the upstream work is really crucial. And like Mary said, a lot of teams and project communities need to focus a little bit more on that so that they don't waste time building something that's not as necessary as it could be, or that really solves a problem that we intend to solve.
You know, David, another thing about the discovery that we found to be problematic at times was it was almost like there's a group of people that are sequestered someplace trying to discover what those needs are. And sometimes it's not a diverse group of folks. So another thing about discovery would be to bring together the business community, the customer community, and the technology community, and they become what we call product partners throughout discovery to delivery. But very importantly, getting those strategic thinkers from the technology community to participate in the upfront discovery, as Ellen mentioned, is something that we really found to be very critical in the success of a effort.
Yes, that's fantastic. I think one of the perhaps surprising things, perhaps not, is that even on projects following Agile practices, the idea of that discovery, the idea of understanding what it is that we're looking for in a new product or a new process, and the requirements that go with that is still as important as ever. The language we use, the forms that we take these things are different, but it's kind of refreshing to know that even though we're taking new practices or following new approaches to those things, that the fundamentals are still really important.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a lot of teams that I think in the eagerness to move to Agile practices, a lot of teams just completely abandon doing analysis altogether. You know, it's this pendulum swing. Oh, we're going Agile. We don't have to do any analysis. Let's just write these stories and we know what we need to do. And of course, we know that that's not quite how it all works out. So a lot of teams are realizing, yeah, we do need to explore what it is that we might be building here. And we need to be clear on what the value is that we're going to make decisions about. So many teams are coming back to the wisdom of those fundamentals that you just talked about.
Yes, that's good. So in the book was released back in September. So it's sort of had a real chance to bed in and be used. How have you found it's been received? What kind of feedback have you been having from people that are putting some of these ideas into practice?
Mary, you want to?
Well, sure. We've been really gratified by the kind of response that we're getting. And it's been so broad-based. It's really global. I mean, we've had feedback from I don't know how many different parts of the world, but that's been very, very informative to see that there's a universal need for this. And the people, the voices that we're hearing, we've had so many different perspectives. We've had business people who've given us feedback. We've had many folks from the technology side giving us feedback. And it really, I think it speaks to our vision for the book, which was to have this, as I mentioned before, the shared way of communicating about product needs. Ellen?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think one of the things that, some of the things that really punch out for a bunch of people that they're making use of and on their projects, you know, we talk about the structured conversation and we talk about the seven product dimensions. And people sigh with relief when it comes to the seven product dimensions. And we just got a tweet this morning from somebody about the seven product dimensions. That's something that they could use right away to have better conversations when there's all these things behind the scenes around a user story, which is really only addressing two of the dimensions, the user and the action, that they also need to converse about the other dimensions. So a lot of individual emails and tweets that we get are around the idea of the seven product dimensions in particular, the feedback around the three views and the structured conversation and value. I think those are the big things that we get feedback. Oh, that's so useful to us right away.
Absolutely. And if I could just interject the value aspect, this thing about value considerations, I just participated in an IIBA webinar about value and the ability, the kinds of questions that people were raising to the panel. It was interesting that many times people really, they can't put their finger on value other than focusing on, oh, well, it's around dollars. And there's so much more about the value and the value considerations. And I think that's the sort of the thread that weaves through the entire book. And as Ellen said, our readers and certainly the clients that we work with when we're doing these facilitated sessions and taking the seven dimensions and the value considerations, we always do a little mini retrospective, of course, after each one. And that is a consistent theme that has been true from back when we started this work up till today. The value.
Mm-hmm. I think the value is one of the most important things we need to be understanding and striving for on any type of project. Alistair Coburn, we just had an Agile conference here in New Zealand last week, and Alistair Coburn was the keynote speaker, and he made the point that business analysis and requirements are still important, but he wanted to change the language around that and started talking about, let's call ourselves value managers rather than business analysts, because it talks to more about the real purpose that we have on those projects.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you brought up the seven dimensions, and as I was reading the book, I really loved that aspect particularly. For me, it was a bit like thinking how in quantum physics, when people are looking at light, you can look at it from at the quantum level as a particle or as a wave. But really, to understand light in its full glory, you need to understand both of those perspectives. And for me, the seven dimensions was a bit like that. It's saying you can understand your problem or your what you're aiming to deliver from one of these perspectives, but really to understand it fully and to make sure that you have uncovered everything you need to uncover, all of these dimensions are important.
Wow, that was great.
So how did you arrive at those seven dimensions? I mean, what was the process you went through? Where did that come from?
Oh my goodness. I don't know if I would be able to answer that question. That's making me laugh because we've had so many iterations of the way to portray them and the visualization of them. Mary, do you want to? I don't know
Sure. I mean, David, this is, again, to your point, this is what we've been doing for some of us for decades. We know that there are what people call functional requirements, but many times people think of primarily the actions or process. And as Ellen and I both started as programmers a few years ago, and we both have strong backgrounds in data, data modeling, data administration, as well as business rules. So for us, it was a natural to make sure that we consider all four, what we consider four aspects of functional, we might call them requirements, which would be who is the user, what actions or processes, what data, and then certainly what controls, which would equal policies or rules at a more testable level. So those were easy. We've always used those. And the funny part is, David, we've always color-coded them. We use color to distinguish these, and it's just a, you know, a reminder, a visual tickle for people. And then Ellen has a reputation, I have to say, in many
ways. Wait, maybe we should end the
You've been talking about, I'll be politically correct here. Her reputation around beating the drum for non-functional requirements. So Ellen, if you want to speak about those three product dimensions for a minute.
Yeah, that's one of my bugaboos. I really dislike that term non-functional because it sounds like it's not important. And when I was working years ago on the software requirements memory jogger and really pouring through the literature, I'm like, oh, crap, we're really going to get stuck with this because it's all over the literature. To think holistically about the product, these non-functional, so-called non-functional requirements, if you don't understand those and deliver those, you're toast. And most people think only of non-functional requirements as quality attributes, but it's more than that. Technically speaking, and we have these as three distinct dimensions, non-functionals are the interfaces, which are provide connections to the product and other outside things. The environment, which are operational and development environments. So if you're a hardware product, it's going to be those, how you access it and the composition of the product. But in any case, it's going to be your hardware, software, standard platforms, if you will. And then the quality attributes, that's what people mostly call the ILDs, you know, performance, reliability, response time, usability, et cetera, and they need to be given equal weight. Again, depending on your product, some of those dimensions, whether they're the quote functional ones or non-functional, will be more important than others. But we didn't want to, you know, we wanted to sort of keep away from that language, the classic language of functional and non-functional, and put them all on an equal plane. So those three would map to interface, environment, quality attributes would map to what you would call non-functional requirements.
Yeah, those are important, aren't they? And it's really good to see the kind of greater focus that splitting them like that gives. Hey, and one of the things I've certainly found, and I think you highlighted, is that the understanding of data analysis has almost become like a lost art for business analysis. It's something I started as well as a software developer nearly 30 years ago, and it's something that we had to do. It's something that I've found some BAs today that are more recent entrants to the field have not been exposed to. So it's really good to see that that's been, you know, a sharp focus has been put on that as well. Is that your finding too?
Unfortunately,
It's sometimes surprising. It does depend, though, on the organization. So some large organizations, I'm thinking of some particular that have a lot of regulatory oversight, have very strong enterprise data groups. And that's a mixed bag because in some cases there'll be great analysts in that area that are totally data-centric and only focused on that dimension. And then analysts in other areas will say, oh, well, that's not my job. That's the enterprise people's job. So it can be a mixed bag. But in general, I would agree with what both you and Mary said, that there's not enough understanding of the importance of data.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that's most striking about this book, other than obviously the content and the message it's bringing, is it's full of illustration. It's a real visual feast for the eyes. And obviously people have a range of learning styles. So some people take very readily to that, you know, the visual nature of the book. What would you suggest to someone who maybe, you know, because obviously modeling and a lot of those things are things that you talk about, what would you suggest to someone who perhaps struggles with that drawing or the visualizing part of their work?
In terms of how to learn from the book?
In terms of how to learn from the book and I guess put it into practice to a degree, because that visualization, which you're extolling in the book and showing examples of, is obviously important in terms of how we do the work as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I'll say one thing, Mary, I think you could add some great perspective to this. One of the things that I think we have to remember in general is that when we are doing this work, we are serving the community that needs to build the product. And it's not about our preferences or needs, but using practices that help people learn about what they need to build. And some people can understand things quickly with visual models. Some people prefer to have lists and matrices. And because people are different, we need to employ both of these techniques. So as an analyst, you may be stretching your edges doing visual modeling, or you may be stretching your edges only doing, you know, tables and matrices. But we need to develop our own analysis muscles in both of those areas in order to serve our community. Mary, you want to?
Yeah, I agree with you, Alan. And David, I think that to carry on with that theme, most of the business folks that we work with, and we work with a lot of organizations where we have the opportunity to have the business with the IT folks together in one room. And there are times when we find the business folks are more eager and more open to the what we call the wall work, doing things visually, doing modeling, whether it's a state diagram or context diagram. They get it. They don't have to do the models themselves, but they are actively participating. So I'm not quite sure I'm answering your question. I do feel that what we attempted to do with the book, like the first section is around the case study. So basically you're just reading this rich narrative of what's happening. It's all about these folks talking. And then we do have references where you can go see the visuals. So I think I would just echo Ellen's point that we have to adapt ourselves to the environment. And I think if anything, we're finding that organizations want much more visual than the dense text specifications that some of us survived for many years.
And I think there's a bit of a cliche, but I think it's also a truism that they say a picture tells a thousand words. And I think it's that balance of the visual where you can summarize, and especially if you're building it in front of people rather than it being a static image, that combined with words is the most sort of powerful thing rather than even just one or either in isolation.
Yes, yes. That is a good truism. And at the same time, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words, but those pictures and the few words on them are worthless unless we understand what they mean. So things like a glossary and having consistency in how we're using those domain terms is also just as important.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that. So it seems, reading through the book, that there's a, if you like, the backbone of the approach is around this structured conversation. I wondered if you could, you know, elaborate a little bit on what that approach entails.
Mary?
Well, sure. To us, this concept of having a conversation is lovely, just like we're really enjoying this conversation with you, David. But it really wasn't structured because we trusted that we had a general idea of what we were doing, and the goal was to just be able to share. Many times we find when teams are trying to build software, they have lots of conversations and they really don't have clear boundaries. They don't have a repeatable way to have a successful conversation. So what we tried to do is provide a lightweight framework that people can use and adjust and adapt as they need to. And what we see is every conversation would always have these three parts. The first part would be you sort of open up your thinking, you explore what the possibilities or options are. And some people call this brainstorming or visioning, whatever. And that's lovely, but we know that we don't have the time or money to do everything. So then we need to have the second part of the conversation, which is to evaluate and select what would be the higher valued options that we just discovered. So we narrow down, we condense, we compress X number options to those high value set. And then we jokingly say the conversation is not complete. We can't leave. We can't close the conversation until we have the third part, which is to confirm everyone's understanding of what those options are. So first we explore, then we evaluate, and third we confirm. And by using that as this repeatable process, we found that folks, they get into a rhythm. They can do this, as you brought up earlier, the seven product dimensions, and they often very quickly reach this shared understanding. And that lightweight structure enables them to better plan for the meetings, so the meetings aren't extended during this long period of time. They can often be very tight meetings. Sometimes they're in a hallway. And then, Ellen, could you speak to how they're used across those different views?
The structured conversation, you mean?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's one of the cool things is that you are going to have, you have the three planning horizons, the big view, preview, and now view. The big view is your whole product roadmap or portfolio roadmap, which could be several years out. The preview is essentially your release time horizon, which might be, again, that's going to depend on your Agile team, how frequently you release. It could be a month, it could be 3 months, 2 months. And the now view is what you're working on now. If you're using a time box approach like Scrum, it's going to be typically a 2-week period. If you're using Kanban, it's what your work in progress is right now, today. So what we have found is the same conversation, the same structured conversation, this meta explore, evaluate, confirm process works regardless of what your planning horizon is. What changes is the level of granularity of what you're talking about in those seven product dimensions. So we'll have conversations and we make heavy use, as Mary said earlier, of the wall. So we'll use symbols for the seven product dimensions that we'll have on the wall. And we create what we call an options board, which has the list of the partners on the left, the business, customer, technology, their value considerations, and potentially risk also on the left side. And then we have the seven dimensions, and we'll go through conversations, maybe starting with a feature or story again, depending on planning horizon, and explore those options and go through the evaluate and confirm process. And then you assemble a set of stories or chunky stories from those. So the approach, the way people are conversing is very quick and it's very rich all at the same time. And it's the same meta process regardless of your planning horizon. So it gets everybody on the same page quickly because, you know, in Agile, you're always planning. You're planning very frequently. You're able to have these conversations very quickly. And the higher the plan, the longer, I should say, the planning horizon, the more formal those conversations will be. You may have more scheduled workshop-y type of things, versus, you know, if you're in the now view and you just need to pull people together and sketch across those seven dimensions for a story at a certain point in time, it's much less formal. So formality will vary at the planning horizon, but the meta process is the same.
So what's interesting there, if I can just pick up on an element of that, you were talking about the seven dimensions, and from that, it would appear you're saying that they're useful to consider whichever level of epic or story or you know, however high level or granular the topic is. Would that be right?
Yes, absolutely, and right. The more granular when your planning horizon is closer to you, more chunky or coarse grain when the planning horizon is further away. But you still want to talk about those seven product dimensions. If you're talking about a big feature or feature group, you want to know, well, what's the key feature, the action, what data will come into play, what regulations or policies, you know, what's the platform we're thinking of when we think about environment, and so on. Very important to have conversations, build shared understanding about these big chunky things coming up in the future as much as possible, because that will also help you make good value decisions for whatever is coming up next.
Yeah, brilliant. So I saw recently that you published an article, Amplifying Agile Practices with Business Analysis. And you recapped a little on some of the topics, or you stressed, shall we say, some of the topics that you covered in Discover to Deliver. What was it particularly you think that you were trying to draw out from the book in terms of how what you've presented in the book is actually put into practice?
Well, we really feel that, and I think all three of us have mentioned it so far, is that the work of business analysis is absolutely essential for us to be able to discover and actually deliver a high value product. And this sometimes gets lost in the agile shuffle. So we wanted to try to make sure, you know, this article was published in the IIBA new venue that they have. And we really wanted to try to make that link with our business analysis community, that taking this and being able to increase the value that we get from Agile right now, one way of doing that is to bring business analysis practices to the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One other aspect I'd just like to share is this idea of viewing the stakeholders as partners. And in trying to sort of drop the titles and just try to find out, you know, who needs to be able to participate in the conversation. And let's make this, you know, we have a shared goal. Ellen and I have written before, and we keep talking about this idea that it's the goal, not the role. So we really try to focus on the work itself, the business analysis work, and how it can amplify for Agile. But also not get so hung up on, well, oh, are you the product owner, product champion is our preference? Are you the business analyst? And some of those are not real productive ways to spend our time. More looking at this from a sense of, you know, how would I participate in that conversation to be able to make smart decisions, and how can I act in a collaborative way?
Yeah, that's really important. One of those you just mentioned there, your use of the term product champion rather than product owner. That's an interesting distinction. I wondered if you could briefly explain why you're wanting to stress that.
Yeah, actually, a number of people have said they kind of appreciate that distinction. The product. A product champion often has a huge responsibility that's both tactical and strategic. And it's really hard when you look at the classic definition of a product owner. They are the one to that has to make decisions about what to build and when to build it. And the assumption is that person knows enough about the strategy, the market, the big picture, and also the detailed down and dirty tactical work for defining acceptance criteria, data, rules, reviewing prototypes, et cetera, accepting the product as it's being delivered. And on many of the large organizations that we work with, it's virtually impossible to find a human being that can do both of these things. But yet the classic Scrum role, and I'm going to use the term role because it's a role in Scrum, of the product owner is that you have all this responsibility. You know the vision, you know the strategy, you represent the voice of the customer. So that's the outward-facing work. And you, by the way, are making decisions every day on what's coming up in the next planning cycle, in the next delivery cycle, I should say. And at the same time, you're answering questions by the team every single day about what they're doing, accepting work, clarifying acceptance criteria, potentially even participating in acceptance testing, being part of the daily stand-up. I mean, how can a person do all that work? And how can you also know everything? So in large organizations, that, quote, you know, PO, that product owner role, needs to consult with other internal communities, whether it's the support group, the marketing folks, and so on. And so, you know, they may have to form a council, a product champion council or whatever. So we wanted to distinguish that role as being a leader that is taking into account balancing the value considerations of the business, of the customer, and of the technology. Not, you know, not some omnipotent person who can handle everything. Mary, you want to add to that?
I thank you, Ellen. I think it goes to the idea of ownership. And no one person owns a product. We see the product champion more as a steward or, you know, an enabler. And it's really the whole team itself, the team that's building the product, that has to have a shared ownership. So we prefer to not use that word and label one person with product owner.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And I think, that's a lot of us have had that similar experience where there hasn't been one person that will step up from the product community. Often you have several product managers that are vying for and having another way for me of the term champion is you can have one person that's championing all of their perspectives, but they don't own the product because there's so many different owners of the product in that sense as well.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you, Mary, and thank you, Ellen, for your time. It's been great having this discussion with you as we've talked through the book and its implications and its impact. And it's been a real pleasure for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye.